Chapter 3. We had our promised get-together with the sub-major the next morning, when he more or less repeated what the Commodore had said, in infantry terms, and in his staccato monotone. He emphasized the fact that all we knew about the Torran ground forces was that if their naval capability was improved, it was likely they would be able to handle us better than last time. But that brings up an interesting point. 8 months or 9 years before, we'd had a tremendous advantage. They had seemed not quite to understand what was going on. As belligerent as they had been in space, we'd expected them to be real Huns on the ground. Instead, they practically lined themselves up for slaughter. One escaped, and presumably described the idea of old-fashioned infighting to his fellows. But that, of course, didn't mean that the word had necessarily gotten to this particular bunch, the Torrens guarding Yod 4. The only way we know of to communicate faster than the speed of light is to physically carry a message through successive collapsar jumps, and there was no way of telling how many jumps there were between Yod 4 and the Torran home base. So these might be just as passive as the last bunch, or might have been practicing infantry tactics for most of a decade. We would find out when we got there. The armorer and I were helping my squad pull maintenance on their fighting suits when we passed the 1,000,000,000-kilometer mark and had to go up to the shells. We had about 5 hours to kill before we had to get into our cocoons. I played a game of chess with Robbie and lost. Then Rogers led the platoon in some vigorous calisthenics, probably for no other reason than to get their minds off the prospect of having to lie half-crushed in the shells for at least 4 hours. The longest we'd gone before was half that. 10 minutes before the 500,000,000-kilometer mark, we squad leaders took over and supervised buttoning everybody up. In 8 minutes, we were zipped and flooded, and at the mercy of, or safe in the arms of, the logistic computer.